Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome in to the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's been on Apple Podcasts, Google, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, feel free to leave a five-star rating or review. Hit that subscribe button and tell a college basketball fan you know about the Behind the Arc podcast. Lots to talk about. It has been a different form of feast week than what we were originally hoping for to start this season, but we've had big games nonetheless. We've had great games at times. Maui Invitational, Jimmy V Classic, Champions Classic, they have all wrapped up in the last couple of days. We're going to talk about those, as well as Tennessee adding a season opener to its schedule ahead of the matchup against Cincinnati. So the Vols will play before December 12th after having to cancel their first four games of the season. We've had some great matchups, and who is emerging with a couple of top 10 teams having already lost this season? What can we expect after seeing the best of the best go head-to-head? And we'll look ahead at that Saturday matchup between Gonzaga and Baylor after both of them won on Wednesday night. But we'll start with Tennessee. The Volunteers dropping to 13th in the country after not playing through the first week and a half or so of the season. And obviously with Kentucky losing, they've dropped back 10 spots to 20th. So Tennessee now back in front of being the highest ranked SEC team at 13th. They just haven't played. Kentucky, of course, after losing to Richmond, falls from 10 to 20th. But Tennessee has added a season opening opponent ahead of its matchup with Cincinnati on Saturday, December 12th. The Vols are going to take on UT Martin on Wednesday, December 9th. The game is going to tip off at 7 o'clock, and you can catch the action for that game right here on the Sports Animal. Tennessee and UT Martin, they have only met four times previously, so this is not an in-state opponent, even though it's in the UT system that Tennessee has played very often. The programs haven't faced each other in 10 years, and Tennessee is 4-0 all-time in the series. So a team that you're likely going to beat in the KenPom rankings, UT Martin sits at 334 in the country. They did just beat Evansville in double overtime. Evansville, 323rd in the KenPom rankings in college basketball. That's out of 357 teams. So not the best opponent that you're going to see this season against Tennessee, but an opportunity for some of these younger players and newcomers, EJ Anasicki and Victor Bailey Jr., the transfers, Keon Johnson, Corey Walker, Jaden Springer, the freshmen that can all come in and have an opportunity to get some real live game action instead of just what they get in practice ahead of that matchup against Cincinnati. Cincinnati coming off a win over Lipscomb on Wednesday night, getting their season started. So Tennessee will have an opportunity to play a game before it takes on a talented team, a team that Tennessee can't take for granted in the Cincinnati Bearcats, led by second-year coach John Brennan. So Tennessee, good to see them getting out ahead of this and trying to add an opponent with that open week that they have, with coming in between the quarantine issue with COVID-19 after Rick Barnes and a couple other members of the program tested positive last week. That led to the cancellation of the Volunteer Classic, led to Tennessee not facing Notre Dame and not taking part in the Jimmy V Classic against Gonzaga on Wednesday night. That was really unfortunate. I know a lot of Tennessee fans were looking forward to that matchup, and it really leaves a lot to be desired with Tennessee's non-conference schedule, because they had already lost Wisconsin due to the pandemic and the season being pushed back 2 weeks. Tennessee was supposed to play Wisconsin earlier in November, and obviously that did not happen. So matchups against Charlotte, VCU, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Gonzaga, those have all been taken off the table. And unfortunately for Tennessee, it just doesn't have as much of a strength of schedule impact as it did 2 months ago. But now you at least have an opportunity to get your team ready for that game against Cincinnati. Of course, Cincinnati beat Tennessee last year. This is a much better Tennessee team. Cincinnati doesn't have Jaron Cumberland anymore. So it's obviously a little bit different in terms of the matchup. It's still a really important game for Tennessee, just to make sure that you avoid the upset, like so many other top teams in college basketball have suffered already. And so I think for the Volunteers, good to see Rick Barnes getting his team ready and putting a game on the schedule as they go in to the SEC schedule at the end of this month with very heavy expectations. So instead of going through this 6-week process where we have a bunch of non-conference games, then the SEC portion of the schedule starts, it's going to be very different. Less than a month from now, Tennessee is going to be gearing up for SEC play in a year where it has been picked to finish first in the Southeastern Conference. What happened in the Jimmy V Classic, the Champions Classic, the Maui Invitational? We'll recap all of that as Tennessee is still waiting to play. The team they were supposed to play on Wednesday night, they were in action. They looked really good, and they've got a monster game on Saturday. We'll talk all the rest of what's happening in college basketball next. We'll update you on what's been happening in the SEC as well. I'm Joel Silverberg. It's the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal. Going back to Tuesday night, the State Farm Champions Classic, you started off with Michigan State and Duke. The Spartans beat Duke at an empty Cameron Indoor 75-69. And then in the nightcap, Kansas rallied to beat Kentucky 65-62 at a neutral site game in Indianapolis. Got to give a lot of credit to Michigan State. I thought Duke was going to win that game playing at home. Sure, there were no fans, and man, Cameron Indoor sounds way different and feels so much different even watching it on TV when there aren't fans in the stands. They've got the bleachers backed up off the baseline the way that they did, so that way staffers could be around the court. You've got the players spreading out more with the benches because of social distancing. Man, it is not the same atmosphere, and it's great to have college basketball and top teams playing and you're still having good games, but I hope we can get things back to normal sooner, because the fans being packed in at Cameron Indoor, college basketball fans really missed out on such a great atmosphere for a game like that. Even if Michigan State had still won, those are the atmospheres that you love, with Fog Allen Fieldhouse and Cameron Indoor and just so many different arenas, Thompson Bowling Arena, so many different places in college basketball that are so special and make the games what they are. And so I hate the fact that we have to play these games in empty arenas or mostly empty arenas, but I hope we get back to the way things were soon enough. But starting with that Michigan State-Duke game, I thought Rocket Watts and Aaron Henry, I think they deserve a lot of credit for what they were able to do, because they're trying to replace Cassius Winston. They're trying to replace Xavier Tillman. Jay Billis said before the game that he believes Tom Izzo has the best passing team that he's ever had, and they get a high percentage of assists. That wasn't the case on Tuesday night against Duke. And that pace that Michigan State was trying to play with, they tried to force passes at times. Duke, really good defensively, were able to turn that into turnovers early. It dug Michigan State into a bad hole early on in that game, but they kind of erupted towards the end of the first half, pulled away in the second, and really took control of that basketball game. Thought it was really impressive by Michigan State, who I thought a team that was going to kind of look a little bit similar to where they did last year, where they were going to compete for the Big Ten, but weren't going to look overly dominant. Performance like that could really make a noise in what is already a very deep Big Ten when you consider Michigan being a ranked team. Indiana looks decent this year. And then, of course, Illinois and Iowa towards the top there, with Ohio State being another ranked team. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody here in just the last several moments. But and Wisconsin being a top 10 team as well, largely widely considered a top 5 team by some after the way that they've just put a whooping on teams offensively through their first couple of games. But Michigan State, with what they have with Rocket Watts having to take a bigger role in the backcourt, Aaron Henry with him having to do a little bit more kind of off that wing position, they combined for 34 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. I was really impressed with what Rocket Watts was able to do coming off that slow start. To have Joshua Langford back, only 3 points in that game for Sparty, but he's missed most of the last 2 seasons with some injuries. It's great to have him back. That's huge for Michigan State if he can stay healthy. And then Joey Hauser, the Marquette transfer, another double-double, 11 points, 10 boards, 4 of 6 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, kind of a do-it-all, jack-of-all-trades utility man for Tom Izzo. Really impressed with what he's been able to contribute so far in Michigan State's first 3 games. So like what I'm seeing out of Hauser, the transfer from Marquette. Duke, it was struggling to hit from the field and struggling to hit from 3-point range. Got out-rebounded 46-40. And just didn't look good offensively at times after that big start. And it's a young team. They've got a great recruiting class, third-ranked recruiting class in the country from the class of 2020, starting three freshmen at this point in time with Jalen Moore, DJ Stewart, and Jeremy Roach. You've got Wendell Moore Jr., Matthew Hurt that are coming back in, Hurt being that spot-up jump shooter. Moore, just an awful night offensively, 0 of 9 from the field. Hurt was 6 of 14. Not seeing him get the looks from outside that you normally see him have, but still a double-double, 21 points, 13 boards. Was kind of having to do everything for Duke last night when he wasn't getting a lot of help from his backcourt, with Stewart and Roach combining for just 12 points on 2 of 11 shooting. So needing a little bit more depth, and that's where Brakefield and Goldwire coming off the bench really helped Duke a lot. 21 bench points for the Blue Devils, but just 32% from the field and 21% from three. And some of these top teams, noticing Kentucky, Michigan State was only 5 of 20, Duke against Michigan State. A lot of top teams are really struggling from beyond the arc, and that's not great. And so it might just be early game jitters. We'll see if that changes. Last year, with the 3-point line getting moved back, it was noted, yeah, more teams are struggling from 3-point range, but teams are missing open looks here, and we've got top teams and great shooters missing open looks. So we'll see if that changes as time goes on. Kansas and Kentucky in the nightcap. Kansas got off to a disastrous start. It was a really ugly game for both teams for the first 4 or 5 minutes before Kentucky went off on a run, took a 12-point lead. Kansas took over, was able to cut the deficit towards the end of the half, and then started to make some headroom for themselves in the second half. And after that loss to Gonzaga, where Kansas clearly had a bunch of problems defensively, I thought it was nice to see the way that they battled back and won that basketball game. Jalen Wilson with 23 points, 50% from the floor, and Kentucky still relying heavily on Brendan Boston Jr. Had 12 points, was the only Wildcat starter to score in double figures. Mintz came off the bench and had 12 of his own. But Kentucky, after going 0-for against Richmond from behind the arc, 3 of 21 on Tuesday night in the Champions Classic against Kansas. It's a young team that's having to replace a lot of talent. And even Olivier Saar coming over from Wake Forest, he offers a lot in terms of length. But the problem is playing in the ACC for Wake Forest is not the same as playing in the ACC for Duke or North Carolina. You're just not playing in the same magnitude of games, and it's going to take some getting used to for Kentucky when you're a blue blood program and having players that are used to being on that stage. And right now, Kentucky, 1-2 on the year, the only win being against Morehead State, losses to Richmond, a good Richmond team, and to Kansas. And so now Kentucky has to get up in a hurry. They'll play Georgia Tech, they'll play Notre Dame, but they've got some tough games before the end of this month. They'll host UCLA in the CBS Sports Classic on December 19th, and then the following Saturday on the 26th is that game against Louisville, of course, with the little accusation going back and forth between Calipari and Chris Mack from the Cardinals. So we'll see what goes on there, but Kentucky off to a really slow start, needs to figure out its offense. They've been incredibly turnover prone, and it's a team that's going to have to win with its defense. They've got incredible length. Their smallest wingspan in their starting five is 6'7". Their average wingspan is around that 6'10", 6'11" range. So they've got the length, and if you try to force passes on the inside, they're going to create takeaways, they're going to create steals. If they can work in transition, they can be really dangerous. But the way that they've been playing offensively, it's putting a lot of pressure on that defense because they are just giving up way too many free possessions to opposing teams right now, and that you can't do that against a team like Kansas. Christian Brown has been fantastic, didn't do a whole lot offensively the other night. Marcus Garrett was playing while he was ill, and then Jalen Wilson, of course, doing the bulk. And the starters really had to do it all, with Kansas only having 2 bench points. Not a great night offensively. They shot 29.9% from the floor. That is the lowest shooting percentage that Kansas has had in a win in the last 10 seasons. So not a great night offensively. Defense getting it done. It helps that Kentucky is not playing that well. But Brown and Wilson combining for 23 rebounds, and a team that is going to get better as the season goes along. But Brown has been really fantastic in the early goings of this season, impacting games in more ways than one, especially considering that Kansas doesn't have Devon Dotson anymore. Moving on to Wednesday, you had the Jimmy V Classic, and it really was a whole day, a fun day of basketball when you also consider that the Maui Invitational was wrapping up. Baylor defeats Illinois 82-69. This was a game that was back and forth throughout most of the second half, and ultimately, Baylor, their depth and their scoring prowess just a little bit too much. You had Flagler adding 18 points off the bench to match a game high. Davion Mitchell with 15 points, hit his first 4 3-pointers, and by the time he missed one, the game was kind of out of reach for Baylor. Jared Butler with 12 points. Macy Oteague, 4 of 10 from the field, had 11 points. And then, of course, what you get out of Mark Vidal, I think, is just so crucial in the front court of what he offers. 7 rebounds in that game. Baylor was really strong on the boards. They had good ball movement, stayed out of foul trouble for the most part, 45% from the floor in a season where we're seeing a lot of teams really struggle to put up strong offensive performances, and then 39% from three. So a complete performance from Baylor against a scrappy Illinois team that wanted to prove something after nearly getting upset by Ohio in their most recent game of the season. So Illinois was off to a 3-0 start, came in as the 5th-ranked team in the country. Ayo Dosunmu having to do it all, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Illinois with some foul issues early on, shooting 44% from the field and doing some damage from three-point range. Kofi Coburn, whenever he could get open inside, he was lethal, but Baylor did an excellent job at really kind of neutralizing him, especially on offense. Wasn't able to do much on the glass. He only played 18 minutes. So you got to give a lot of credit to what Baylor was able to do defensively, because they kind of eliminated Coburn from the situation, were able to focus in on Dosunmu, and you'll let him get his. But if the rest of Illinois can't hurt you, they're not going to do a whole lot. Illinois is deep, though. They've got 26 bench points in this game, so you know that they have more than just a starting five. They're going to win some ball games. They're going to compete with Iowa and Michigan State and Wisconsin for the Big Ten. But Baylor showing why it's widely considered Gonzaga 1, Baylor 2. They're going to show down this Saturday night, and nobody else at this point in time really seems to come close. And speaking of Gonzaga, I got to give a lot of credit to West Virginia, because I thought this game could potentially be a rout. I thought the way that West Virginia had looked in its first three games wasn't overly impressive, and they got rolling. Emmett Matthews was really good for them in the front court, along with Oscar Tshiebwe. Tshiebwe showed that he has some really nice footwork. Derek Culver just continues to be phenomenal. 18 points, 15 rebounds, a pair of assists, 6 of 13 from the floor in 34 minutes. He is... right now, I think he is an early candidate for Big 12 Player of the Year, and I know that includes everybody that Baylor has. That includes the hot start that Texas is off to. We'll get to the Longhorns in just a moment. But Derek Culver is being asked to do more. Right now, he's the Peyton Pritchard of the Big 12. There is not a team in that conference that is asking more from a single player on their team than what West Virginia is asking from Derek Culver. So they need more out of their backcourt with McNeil and McBride. They're getting good production off their bench. But ultimately, West Virginia needs to find somebody else other than Derek Culver coming off that wing to do more. They need guards that can operate the offense, that can distribute a little bit better, and that can start putting points on the board. But Gonzaga, with what they are able to have, and the fact that they have Andrew Nembhard coming off the bench for them. Remember, he was a starter at Florida. And Jay Billis said last night on the broadcast, he's probably a starter at 98% of Division I schools in the country, and he's coming off the bench for Gonzaga, and he was arguably Gonzaga's most important player when West Virginia was going back and forth, had the lead early, was really frustrating Gonzaga offensively. You had the usual suspects, Drew Timmy with 17 points, Corey Kispert with 19 points. His ability, he's known for what he can do on the perimeter. His ability to drive, get to the basket, and finish. Gonzaga as a whole is a fantastic finishing team. A bunch of and ones last night. Excellent job rebounding the basketball despite West Virginia having all of that length. Gonzaga was able to hold its own. Jalen Suggs, not the best night for him. Didn't have to be, affected the game in other ways. Just 2 of 6 on the night, but 6 rebounds and 5 assists. Joel Ayayi, 21 points. 7 rebounds, 4 assists. But Andrew Nembhard, coming off the bench, played 35 minutes, 8 of 14 from the field, 19 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. And Gonzaga shooting 49% from the field against the 11th-ranked team in the country. An outstanding performance from Gonzaga. Not nearly as great offensively as they were against Kansas. I think Kansas had some defensive issues that they needed to work out. But what we've seen from West Virginia, this is the type of game that they can claw and scrap their way into. I didn't think it was going to happen. But man, oh man, did West Virginia look impressive, which makes it even more impressive how Gonzaga was able to play as well as it did and come away with that win. And now you've got Gonzaga and Baylor coming up on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. This was the matchup that was previewed throughout the offseason that they agreed that they were going to play. And then that went up in jeopardy. Are we going to have a non-conference schedule? Could they play in Orlando if the Jimmy V Classic went down there? Could they just decide we're going to take an open court and we're just going to play an extra basketball game? Instead, they're going to play in Indianapolis. This game is going to happen, and I think that's great for college basketball because this is an awesome showdown where you've got a bunch of college football games that are being postponed or canceled this upcoming weekend. It's going to be at 1 o'clock, so if you're a Tennessee fan, you can see the Tennessee-Florida game at 3:30 and still catch that Gonzaga-Baylor game at 1 o'clock. But this is going to be great. Baylor, what they do defensively against Gonzaga and that high-powered offense, I am so excited for this matchup. It's easily the biggest college basketball game of the regular season. Gonzaga and Baylor also 1-2 in the KenPom rankings. Gonzaga, the highest-ranked team in adjusted offensive efficiency, 17th-ranked in adjusted defensive efficiency. Baylor, second in offensive efficiency, 8th in defensive efficiency. Now, where you see the big difference here is adjusted tempo. Gonzaga ranks 11th, Baylor 285. So which team can take control of the pace more? Which team can force the other team to have to play more towards its own style? Can Baylor or Gonzaga make the other uncomfortable? It's going to be really interesting to see. On Wednesday, also the Maui Invitational wrapped up. You saw Texas beat North Carolina on a game-winning shot as Matt Coleman III hit a step-back jumper in the final second to help Texas knock off North Carolina. That is a monster win for Shaka Smart in Texas. It's been kind of frustrating over the years, I think, after letting go of Rick Barnes, seeing the success he's had at Tennessee. Texas has had some really good players since Shaka Smart has been there, and the success hasn't necessarily translated as a whole on the basketball court. So After a couple of so-so games in November during the week of Thanksgiving, you know, beat UT Rio Grande pretty easily and then really struggled with Davidson, you kind of wondered, man, is this going to be another one of those years for Texas? They go to the Maui Invitational. They beat Indiana in the semifinals really handily, and that was an Indiana team that was coming off what I thought was an expected but a decent win against Providence. And then for Texas to respond to that by beating North Carolina in the Maui Invitational Championship game, really, really good start for Texas to be 4-0 at this point in the season. And then Sunday, they've got a huge matchup in the Big East, Big 12 battle when they take on Villanova. So that game's going to be at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And then in another week after that, Big 12 play will start, and Texas is going to take on Baylor. So the next two Sundays are going to be really crucial to see exactly where Shaka Smart has this team, because this is really impressive with what Texas has been able to do thus far. But if you start dropping games, a lot of people forget about what you did in November and December by the time you get to March. So for Shaka Smart, after all the success that he had taking VCU to the Final Four, ushering in their transition from the Colonial Conference to the Atlantic 10, now being here at Texas Tech in his sixth season, I didn't necessarily see them getting to the NCAA tournament. I know they were a fringe team last year, but the year before that won the NIT. They have been to the NCAA tournament just twice in his first 5 years, and they were knocked out in the first round in his first and third season. So they've never won more than 21 games in a year. They have struggled at times. They have not finished better than a tie for third in the Big 12. So, and it's tough when you've got Kansas always there at the top. Oklahoma's had some really good teams. Remember, they had Trae Young a couple years ago, well, since Smart has been at Kansas. But now that what Scott Drew's doing at Baylor, it's just going to make that team a lot tougher. Texas Tech with Chris Beard making the national championship game a few years ago. So seeing all these other programs kind of pass Texas while Shaka Smart has been there, that's not good. So Smart needs to get things rolling. Really impressive win to beat North Carolina, especially on a game-winning shot. That's one that's, if Texas goes on to a big season, that could be the reason why, where you see like what you did with Tennessee a few years ago. They get that overtime forcing three-pointer from Lamonte Turner against Purdue. They go on to win that game, changes the whole outlook of the season. And now here you are with Texas beating North Carolina, and Jericho Sims has obviously been someone that's been noted to watch. He was actually held scoreless in just 13 minutes in that game against North Carolina. And at other times this season, though, he's been really, really crucial, really expected to what they want to do. And he's been really held in check this season. Just 12 points is his season high. That was against Davidson, and has not had that big impact offensively as much as you would expect him to when you consider how he's contributed in the past. Was nearly a double-digit scorer a couple of years or last year, along with averaging 8 rebounds per game, and just hasn't put up the numbers so far this season. Coleman finished with 22 points. They get a lot of contribution off the bench, and I think for Texas to be able to get a win over a North Carolina team that's trying to get rid of the ugly taste in its mouth from last season, it's always impressive when you can beat North Carolina. That was a top 15 team that the Longhorns beat yesterday to win the Maui Invitational title. What's happening in the SEC? One coach, a former Tennessee coach, got a really impressive win Wednesday night against a top 25 team on a neutral floor. What's happening around the rest of the league? Florida is set to start its season very shortly, and the rest of the conference still trying to pick back up after a slow start with a couple of upsets and just a couple of lackluster performances. Talk about all of that next in the Southeastern Conference right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. Florida got its season started earlier this week on Wednesday night and went out to Bubbleville and needed every minute to escape an Army team that ranks outside the top 200 in the KenPom rankings. They were down by 8 at the half, had to rally Trey Mann with 19 points. That is not the start Florida was hoping for, but they got the win and avoided the upset. Keontae Johnson with 16 points, going 6 of 10 from the floor. And Florida, a bigger team, a more athletic team, got out-rebounded by Army, a team that had gotten off to a 3-0 start, but still, for Florida, man, that's not the highlight you're looking for. Florida is going to open up, it's going to continue its season against Boston College in the Roman Legends Classic Thursday night at 9:30. So an opportunity to see the Gators against a team that Boston College has kind of shown that it could be competitive. Not a great loss against St. John's earlier in the week, but did come really close to pulling off an upset over Villanova earlier last week. So you're seeing Florida finally get to start its season. That leaves just Ole Miss and Tennessee as the only two teams in the SEC that have not gotten their season underway. Tennessee, of course, will begin its season next Wednesday against UT Martin. Ole Miss is still waiting until December 10th against Jackson State, which that game is still kind of on the fringe of potentially being postponed. That game has likely been canceled. Initially, that was included in the release. So Ole Miss likely going to start its season against UNC Wilmington on Saturday, December 12th. But the SEC, with some interesting results on Wednesday, Georgia beat North Georgia in an exhibition. Texas A&M beat Tarleton, which is one of the new Division I schools. Alabama in the Maui Invitational, after initially beating UNLV, then lost to Stanford. One-sided, in fact. And I think Stanford's that team that could potentially be on the cusp of doing some big things. I like what Zaire Williams does. Oscar De Silva is very important for them. It's a team that's trying to replace Tyrell Terry. But Stanford, I thought, looked pretty good in that win over Alabama, especially having to get its season started when you didn't know what to expect after Alabama had already kind of taken care of business against Jacksonville State. So Alabama bounced back, beat UNLV, and then handled a talented Providence team really well. So John Petty had 16 points, Jaden Shackelford with 15 in that game on Wednesday night. So Alabama 3-1 to start the season, the only loss coming to a talented Stanford team. They're going to play Clemson on Saturday, and you're used to seeing this matchup in football, but for Hoopsgiving, Alabama's going to play Clemson on Saturday, December 12th, so the Tide have some time to get ready for that game. And I think for Alabama, it's just another opportunity to add a power conference win to your resume, considering that Clemson has already beaten Mississippi State earlier this season. So there's an opportunity there. Arkansas remained undefeated as they improved to 3-0 with a win over UT Arlington. And UT Arlington, not a great basketball team, but they did give Oklahoma State some problems last week. So Arkansas, nice to see them going out and taking care of business. Again, so far, that is the only team that you've seen go out and do what you've expected them to do. They've handled the three teams they've played without much trouble. They haven't really entertained the idea of an upset, and they haven't played great teams, but they're at least taking care of business. Florida, Kentucky, LSU, they can't say that. Not so far about what they've done so far this season. Missouri, however, I think you have to put them in that camp now after opening up their season with an easy win over Oral Roberts. Missouri went out on a neutral floor and beat 21st ranked Oregon 83-75. It was Oregon's first game, so potentially a little bit of a advantage for Missouri there, but a really nice win for Konzo Martin after the last couple of seasons have been kind of tough. He's had some injury issues over there, but to bounce back and get that win over Oregon to start this season after the win over Oral Roberts, your first real test of the year, I thought that was really impressive from Konzo Martin. They made it look kind of easy compared to what the final score says it was. Xavier Pinson with 22 points, Mitchell Smith with 15, Jeremiah Tillman and Drew Smith each with 11 points. So you've got four starters scoring in double figures, and then Javon Pickett comes off the bench and he adds 13. So Missouri, a really good offensive showing against a really talented team and a great coach in Dana Altman that still has Nafali Dante, still has Chris Duarte, and it is trying to replace Peyton Pritchard. And that's the tough part of it. It's trying to replace one of the best guards in college basketball. And I mentioned Derek Culver earlier and how much West Virginia is asking of him so far through four games this season. Well, Oregon was asking a lot of Peyton Pritchard last year. Eugene Amoruyi, I'm going to butcher that name throughout the entire course of the season. Really awesome for Oregon, 31 points, 11 rebounds. He's going to be really special for them this season. The senior from Ontario continuing to make big plays for the Ducks, but just not enough. And especially with Duarte having 22 points out of the backcourt. So you've got contributions in your front court, your backcourt, but defensively, Missouri looked really, really good and were able to take advantage of some flaws that Oregon clearly had last night. And that's an Oregon team that, as of right now, is still ranked in the top 30 in the KenPom rankings, that was supposed to have a top 50 defense, a top 20 offense, and Missouri looked really, really good. KenPom's got them at 46 in the country now, with the 38th ranked offense, the 49th ranked defense. That typically gets you in the tournament, especially if you stay off this hot start and you find ways to beat some of these other middle of the pack SEC teams. You could do some really good things for yourself. And their non-conference schedule is not full of cupcakes. It's tougher than Tennessee's. They get Wichita State. I realize Wichita State, Greg Marshall's not going to be there. They had a ton of attrition from last season. It's not one of the better Wichita State teams you'll see. But that's an opportunity for Missouri on Sunday. Next Wednesday, they're going to take on Liberty. They will host Illinois on December 12th. And then they'll take on Bradley before they open up the SEC schedule against Tennessee on December 30th. Bradley, of course, one of the top teams in the Missouri Valley Conference. So a pretty decent non-conference schedule for Missouri. And it helps to start off that slate with a 2-0 record, especially when one of those wins is against Dana Altman and Oregon. So I like what I've seen so far. The SEC making things a little bit better this week than what you saw earlier in the week. The only action on Thursday is that Florida game against Boston College. And then on Friday, Georgia will take on Jacksonville. Mississippi State will take on North Texas. Auburn will try to get back on track after a couple of bad losses. They're going to take on South Alabama. And then Saturday, we see Houston take on South Carolina. That's probably the best SEC game of the weekend. Ole Miss was supposed to play Memphis. That game, of course, has been canceled. Arkansas will host Lipscomb. Florida takes on Stetson on Sunday. We mentioned Missouri, Wichita State. Texas A&M faces UT Rio Grande. Kentucky will meet Georgia Tech, and LSU will face Louisiana Tech. So you've got some games this weekend, but the big one, of course, on the weekend in college basketball is going to be that game between Gonzaga and Baylor. So be sure to tune into that game Saturday at 1:00. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're getting closer and closer to SEC basketball, and now, thanks to a recent schedule addition from Rick Barnes, we're 3 days closer than we were to Tennessee basketball as the Vols will take on UT Martin. And should note, that is a UT Martin team that's playing with a heavy heart. Just a few weeks ago, back on November 15th, their coach, Anthony Stewart, was found dead suddenly at the age of 50. Really tragic situation there for UT Martin. And they've posted on social media that they're going to be playing this entire season with heavy hearts. They want to play for him. Really emotional win on Wednesday night as they beat Evansville in double overtime. So a ton of respect for what the Skyhawks are having to go through right now. You mourn with them. You grieve with them. And that's really unfortunate. So glad to have those players have the opportunity to get to play a team like Tennessee, and hopefully they enjoy the experience. But just really unfortunate, terrible, terrible news what the UT Martin men's basketball program has had to go through in the past month getting ready for this basketball season. And Jeff Goodman on Twitter, when he tweeted about the news, he said, I just texted him this morning talking about getting ready for the upcoming season the day that it happened. So just the college basketball world, it's the worst story we've seen so far. I absolutely hate that stuff. I mean, there's been other incidents with everything going on with Greg Marshall and all that, but man, you hate seeing stuff like this. And the cause of death is uncertain. I don't know if it's COVID related or not, but UT Martin is going to continue to try to play this season despite dealing with everything that those players, the coaching staff, the families, everybody around the UT Martin men's basketball program has had to go through in the past month. Absolutely hate to see stuff like that. But college basketball's back. Big matchups coming up this week. Florida-Boston College, the one SEC game for your Thursday night. And then you'll see more as we get to the weekend. But Gonzaga-Baylor, 1-2 on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Be sure to tune in to all the action. And next week, we'll be recapping all of it right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you so much again for checking out Behind the Arc. If you like the podcast, hit that 5-star rating button on Apple Podcasts. Hit the subscribe button and tell someone you know about the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.